I think we'll start with the weather, because if we go back to 27th of January 1843, Ludwig Leichhardt had been here for a couple of days in the area. He came deliberately to Mount Royal, and I've been following up the weather because I wanted to try and correlate the weather conditions with what was in his journal, because it was a bit disjointed. But the weather in Sydney, this is the weather report out of the Sydney Morning Herald, was: morning, a light scud passing from southward to light south to southeast wind, veered east to northeast AM and came on to blow very fresh before noon, and rose PM to a very strong wind. Atmosphere cloudless but very hazy. Towards sunset the wind moderated. It was a southeasterly wind, which is the same weather pattern that we have at the moment, which is characteristic of the wind blowing off the coast and bringing it onto the eastern side of the mountain ranges here. And if you look at the vegetation, all on the eastern faces is all rainforest, and the western faces are a lot drier. It's probably a good way to start the story as well, because he had some wet weather which forced him to go back to the local station, because his main purpose on this trip was to collect plant specimens. And he had collecting canisters with him, which were big boxes that were tied on his pack horse. And they went through a complicated process of trying to dry the specimens in the field as far as they could before they then properly mounted them and prepared them and then sent them off for a collection. And what we'll do this morning is do the walk up the ridge. And I think what I'd like you to try and do as you do it is just imagine that you're somebody from the other side of the world that's come to a place which is very unfamiliar, that you are out looking for all the different plants you can find, knowing that quite a lot of these are probably new to science and have never been described or written down in European tradition anyway, and that you're trying to collect as much and at the same time observe the geology and a fairly meticulous scientist trying to keep tabs of everything. At the same time, you've got limited rations, you've got a horse that has run away on you, it's getting wet, that you're losing things, and you're a long way from anywhere. So with that, let's head up the hill, up Mount Royal, and brave the rain.
Martin Folding has had a property on the slopes of Mount Royal for over 30 years. Today, he's leading a walk in the footsteps of German explorer Ludwig Leichhardt. It's 170 years since Leichhardt visited Mount Royal collecting botanical specimens, many of which exist to this day in herbariums around the country. Hi, I'm Joel Werner, and you're listening to the wettest episode of Off Track to Date. As an explorer, Leichhardt is better known for his expeditions through northeastern Australia and the mysterious circumstances surrounding his disappearance in the desert. So, how did Martin come across evidence of this somewhat obscure trip to Mount Royal, 50 kilometres north of Singleton in New South Wales?
I've always been interested in the natural history of this area, and by chance a neighbour of ours worked at the Australian Museum. He was particularly interested in insects and somehow came across the published book of Leichhardt's letters by a fellow called Arousseau. And by a rather convoluted process, I got a photocopy of the section of that book that relates to Mount Royal. And it was rather tantalising because it said all these things about events, but I thought, well, isn't there more than just this? Did he keep a journal? What were his records? Where did the letters come from? And so I did a bit of research and tracked down some of the manuscripts in the Mitchell Library in Sydney, and we've been able to retrace fairly accurately the journey that he took from Glendon into this area and then back, and we can walk some of those trails and some of those routes. Then there are a number of those places where he has identified in his specimens the location from which they came, and in matching up the specimens and the places and the journal, we can put together a list of what specimens were collected at each place. And my object with that was to try and say, if we can go back to those places now, do those specimens still exist at that place? And that's really where we're at this point with the research, really. And the prompting question behind it for me has been, well, has there been a change since Leichhardt was here? If so, what has that change been? What does that actually tell us about the way we manage the landscape now?
So we're in the rain, as you can probably hear. We're walking up the side of Mount Royal. It's quite steep, mostly covered in grasses with a few trees poking out here and there. What sort of gradient do you think this hill's on?
Probably 1 to 6, I would think. Standing in front of us is a really big Eucalyptus obliqua, or mesmate stringy bark, which is characteristic of Mount Royal. These are probably hundreds of years old, and as you can see, it's got a hollow where a big branch is broken off, and this is what Leichhardt in his journal wrote as black butts. Now, presumably there would have been periodic Aboriginal fires through here which gave them the appearance of black butt, but it's not actually the black butt that we know today. This is the species of tree where he had his camp for 4 days in a hollow tree. So this is a small version of what was around at that time. As we get higher up, we get into some species of gums as well. You can see one right up the hill up there. The other thing that's really noticeable, because of the wet weather and the mists that come in off the coast, is the lichens and mosses that are growing on the trees. You notice it on the acacia down there, just how it hangs off it, and some of them are really dense. And I don't know, they've got a woolly sort of appearance, really. The other tree that you'll notice is the casuarinas, sometimes having ferns and things in them. But we'll head up through the grassland. On our right-hand side, you'll notice the small rainforesty shrubs that are starting to invade a little bit. It's largely a result of the distribution of fire, and the fire burns over to the edge of the rainforest and often kills those, but with the lack of fire they start spreading out. But it's a continual dynamic between the two types of vegetation, and it's quite a sharp difference. So I think we'll just go up for another few hundred metres, just walk up and find a nice spot to stop, and we might talk further, but just at your own pace.
There's a seemingly paths. I don't know if I'm just being optimistic and looking for for the path of least resistance, but are they paths, or is it just my imagination, my sort of rain-soaked on a steep incline on the side of a mountain? Well, wishful thinking.
The simplest answer is yes and no, because there certainly are wallabies that come up and use this. There are bushwalkers as well that use it, and they tend to follow a straight route, but bushwalkers and wallabies have a different behaviour, and wallabies tend to go across the slope a lot more. But you're right, there are paths. And surprisingly, you know, if you've got a large group of people walking through, the effect of that can last for quite some time because of the trampling in the earth.
Because this is radio, the listeners can't see what I'm talking about. It's not a well-established path. It's not a path like you'd get straight off a car park when you're bushwalking. But having been walking for maybe 15 minutes, you do start to see these tracks winding through the grasses. And I didn't know if it was me or if it was, maybe wallabies or some sort of...
But there are quite a lot of animals that move around. I mean, we're talking wallabies. We're also talking quolls that are around here. I mean, birds would be scratching. So there's a hive of activity, so then things need to move. So that's probably a fair guess. If you look at the lichen on the rock here too, you'll see why walking in the rain shows that much more colour. If you looked at that on a hot, dry day, that would just be grey and nothing, but it's soaked up the moisture, it's standing up. You've got yellows and oranges and different shades of greeny greys. It's all very much come to life.
Oh, the bush definitely comes to life on a wet day. It's amazing. It's like it's breathing, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's a sign of relief after all those hot summer days. I wonder if it's worth describing a little bit what we're walking through. There's small saplings rather bent over and blown towards the east because of the prevailing winds coming from the west. Then there's scattered really big trees, all with that characteristic lean on them. Then it's fairly grassy and open underneath, but quite a lot of loose rocks, which are the basalt rocks of which Mount Royal's formed. Big logs, like one we just walked over, that have been branches that have fallen off and are the habitat for the various small critters. And a few flowers, but lots of sort of grass up to my knees, and also lamandra, which is quite sharp and can cut you if you get it on the wrong angle. So
the grass is really the defining feature of this slope as well. It's what is here most prominently, I guess.
Yes, and it's also what is attractive to walk through, because a lot of the forests in this area can be quite dense, but here you can see where you're going and it's nice and open. What I'll get you to do is to just look out into the white and imagine that you can see just a little bit further, and I'll read you what was written in the journal. I'll read you the German first, because that's how it was written, and the journal is both in English and in German, and then I'll give you the abbreviated translation. Auf der Spitze des Mount Royal belohnt die herrlichste Aussicht aller Mühe des Ersteigens. Sie ist wunderherrlich. Gebirgszüge, scharfe, gerade Kuppen. Der Lauf des Wassers ist so überschaulich und klar. Es ist ein Meer von Hügeln und Zügen, die sich in die Blaue des Horizontes verleihen. The translation is, the most magnificent view on the peak of Mount Royal repays all the effort of ascending. It is most splendid. Mountain ranges, sharp-ridged summits. The course of the waters is so surveyable and clear. It is a sea of hills and ridges which vanish in the blue of the horizon. What I find really interesting about this is the fact that you can look out there, and that description that he wrote, you could write the same thing today without any doubt, and you can be absolutely certain where he was. I think there are very few places where you've got both a combination of a large group of plant specimens plus a list of plants, and we're in the order of 70 plant specimens that we know within a very short distance where they were collected, plus there are other listed species, and that's for one place which we can see has relatively been unchanged in 170 years. And I think the scale of landscape change in Australia has been so dramatic that that's quite unusual.
You're listening to Off Track on RN with me, Joel Werner, coming to you from the rain-soaked slopes of Mount Royal in the Hunter Valley.
One thing I probably should have mentioned too is that Mount Royal National Park is also forming part of the Gondwana Rainforest's World Heritage Area. So it's the southernmost extent of the series of parks with rainforest areas that goes all the way north up into the Queensland border. So it's been in existence now for 25 years, which is something that doesn't really get known much in this part of the world, but it's primarily because of the rainforests and their connection to the former Gondwanan flora, so that a lot of species can trace their direct ancestry through to the supercontinent of Gondwana. So, this is Young's Road.
This really highlights what you're talking about before, where not even 20 metres into this track and suddenly it's misty, there's completely different vegetation. It's a bona fide rainforest.
Yeah, it's dark green and very shiny leaves and everything thick, whereas before we could see through it for quite a distance, you really have to charge through the undergrowth and you can't see that far. By comparison, the trees in this rainforest area are a lot taller than up on the ridge, probably getting up to nearly 50 metres high. There are tree ferns, there are some large red cedar trees, which we'll come to soon, and the other distinctive thing is the large-leafed stinging tree, which has a bite when you brush against it, something not to be recommended. That large tree there you see with a straight trunk, but then these very branched leaflets is a red cedar tree, which is the one that was logged here early on, although this section here has probably never been logged for red cedar because it was too hard to get timber out. One of the interesting things with the tree ferns is that those large tree ferns are what Leichhardt used to line his tree when he was sleeping. So he used it to make his bedding and make it more comfortable. And as I'll describe later, it's also a source of bit of misfortune, because when he was in the tree, they caught fire and burnt some of his paper for mounting his specimens. So another little disaster along the way.
It's a muddy, half-hour tramp down the Young's Road track before we decide to venture into the depth of the rainforest gully.
Quite literally getting off track now. Following the path no more. Getting down into the rainforest proper. The first thing you notice is how much darker it is. There's viney plants hanging off the canopy, moss lichen covered trees and stones, and it's just rich. There's decaying leaf matter, decaying wood everywhere, feeding the plants that are still growing. And lyrebirds. There's at least two or three lyrebirds running around. We just heard their call before. It's a quite magical place. Just have to stop every few meters and take in what's happening around you. A fig tree like one you'd see in any park, in any city in Australia, but on a much bigger scale.
Yeah, quite tall. This is a strangler fig, so that what happens is the host tree grows up and the fig germinates high up and sends its roots down and eventually envelops the host and grows into its own big tree. What makes it different from trees in parks, I think, is if you look up in the canopy, the number of ferns and orchids that are sitting up there. It's like a different world up about 30 metres above ground. And there's this, all this canopy of vines hanging around us. And with all the rain, some of these low soaks have sort of filled up with water and it's all getting a little bit sloppy, but that's what rainforests are all about.
So this is what Leichhardt would have referred to as brush then, Martin?
That's exactly right, yes. And he made a comment about how difficult it was to get plant specimens from some of these trees and to identify them, and that's because the canopy is so high. He talked about red cedars, which is this tree with a rough bark in front of us, about a metre diameter and with buttressed roots, and lots and lots of ferns. And there is quite a collection of ferns in the herbarium in Sydney. So this would have been something quite novel, I think, for him.
Well, today, in terms of studying this particular type of ecosystem, you often have scientists bringing in professional abseilers with rope and pulley systems to get them into the canopy. I mean, I don't imagine Ludwig would have been travelling with an abseiling kit.
No. And he also lamented when he was looking at animals as well, he lamented what a bad shot he was, so he couldn't actually get any animal specimens. There's a lovely description in his journal about how he ate potoroo and how well that tasted if it was well cooked. So they're all things that we could not contemplate today. This large one is a giant stinging tree. Looks a bit like the fig, but it's a big example of a stinger. And this is a corkwood tree. So this is really identical to what he would have seen. The trees would have changed in age, but some of these big trees would have been here 140 years ago, and the overall picture would not be too different from what it is now. So, who wants to lead us back out? It's part of a larger story that actually played an important role in Australian history, and that all these little bits of information about the plants, when put together, performs a really useful scientific role in documenting our natural history, but hopefully also explaining it to people and hopefully understanding it better. The specimens that we see from those locations now appear to be the same as the locations and the specimens that Leichhardt observed. When you read the descriptions that he wrote, you could almost swear that it was what you are seeing now. So that indicates that the actual visual image of the landscape is similar. And so the general conclusion that I've drawn, which is not what I expected originally, is that the landscape is remarkably unchanged from when he first visited the area. Apart from anything else, though, I just find the whole concept of somebody going out in the bush, living in a hollow tree for a few days by himself, finding all these things and living all these adventures really quite exciting, especially to today's world where everything is really well controlled, where accidents are not supposed to happen. And yet here was somebody that just had little misfortunes but kept on regardless, and that passion and interest really took him through.
Martin Folding, leading us in the footsteps of explorer Ludwig Leichhardt on the 170th anniversary of Leichhardt's trip to Mount Royal. 2013 also happens to be the 200th anniversary of Leichhardt's birth, so keep an eye out for Leichhardt-related celebrations throughout the year. If you'd like to see images from the waterlogged trip to Mount Royal, head to the Off-Track website. Just go to abc.net.au/radionational and search for Off-Track. Once you're there, you'll find links to further information and some audio extras that I just couldn't fit into today's show. Remember, you can always subscribe to the podcast via your iTunes library or come say hi on Twitter. I'm at Joel Werner. But that's all there is for this week. Until next time, bye for now.